That was a challenging topic. What's the most important part of the spiritual path for you? And you can come at it from so many different angles. And I thought, well, there's master, obviously, there's Swami, there's community, satsang, there's all different parts of it. And I kept thinking, well, yeah, how do you tell one's bigger, better than the other? And finally came up with a different kind. I said, most important part of the spiritual path for me is that it works. And that was a big question for me, of course, in the beginning. Because we all come to the spiritual path, you know, we're new. And we don't know what this thing is we're getting into. We don't have the practice. We don't have the experiences that come with time. And there's a lot of question marks, you know, does it work? Is this another, is going to be another dead end? Is this going to be something that I put my energy into and I get disappointed? And I had had many experiences like that coming up to starting up on the path. I had tried, different things. I won't go into them this morning. But here was this other approach, and it had to do with going inward for your answers instead of looking outward. And all the things I'd tried before, they all had that in common. They were all had something to do with looking outward for answers. And of course it hadn't come about that way, the resolution that I wanted. So in trying this inward path, it's so different because it doesn't have the normal signposts that you're used to looking for. You don't get a bigger paycheck if your sadhana is going better. You don't get a promotion. You don't get, sometimes you get demoted. Your sadhana is going really well. All of a sudden you find yourself out, you know, shoveling ditches. And you say, is that a success or is that a failure? You know, you're completely turned upside down. But what you do find, is a whole nother way of looking for fulfillment in life, looking for a sense of accomplishment. And that is that increasing inner appreciation that you are part of something more than you thought you were. It's so interesting looking at how people, also the part of the path is that it's beyond words. You study, like this last term at the college, I taught a class on world religions. So we got a chance to look at all the main religions. And there's so many outward differences of them, you know, even the different words for God, you know, Yahweh or Allah or God or Krishna or whatever it is. And you start to see that it's all just different ways of trying to capture in language something that you really can't capture. But there is an inner experience of completeness that comes with a spiritual path. And it's not dependent on anything outward. It helps. It helps to have satsang. It helps to live in a place like this. God, what an incredible blessing to live in a place like Ananda Village. The people that have that kind of karma are drawn here for that. Other people have different kinds of karma. And God is completely able to create another kind of answer to that outwardly. It doesn't have to be spiritual community. Spiritual community can be incredibly helpful if you can get it. But for other people, it could be living in a slum somewhere, surrounded by drugs and alcohol and poverty. And God would find a way. If that's where you were put, God would find a way to find you there. And in fact, it would probably be the best way. I remember there's a autobiography of, I think it's Cellini, Benvenuto Cellini, and who was living in the Italian Renaissance at some point and got thrown in jail as part of his thing, and stuck in solitary confinement. And he was a nobleman and had been used to, you know, more outward, beautiful things around him. And he finally got out of jail after 2 or 3 years, I forget how long it was, and his comment was, I don't want to leave. I don't want to leave because I found God in my cell. I found God there. And that's the only thing that's important. And so for all of us, you know, we have that experience that we are going to, if we, as Savitri learned from Prakash, if we just have that one blessing of just continuing, not giving up, it'll come. It'll come in its own way, in its own unique way. For us, it's always really exciting because our individual unfoldment is unique. That's what I think God enjoys in the whole thing. He always enjoys looking at the countless millions and billions of different ways that people can find self-realization. because everybody's drama is different. So we have to have that sense of perseverance that we will. We'll just keep trying whatever was put in front of us. You know, if we're taught Hong Sa, I'll practice Hong Sa. If we're taught the energization, I'll practice energization, whatever we get. And if we just do that, then it'll unfold for us. And it's fascinating to watch. One of the blessings of being in community is it's such a zoo of personalities. It's so unusual because if you work in the computer industry, there's a certain kind of personality that is attracted to computers, and you know, more or less. If you go play sports, there's a certain kind of personality that plays sports or dances or goes into big business or something like that. You can kind of narrow it down into what types of persons are drawn to that particular endeavor. But the spiritual path simply, again, transcends them all, because you get here and you see all kinds of people here. You see people with, you know, outgoing, you see Shivani types who are out there to conquer the world. And you see Devarshi types who are very much more inward and centered and quiet. And you see all kinds of people. You see Swami. Swami, you know, he just has this personality of conquering the world, going out there and just every moment stepping out further and further. And then you see other people really different than that. But the thing is, the path is for each. We don't have to change our personality. That's not required of the path. There are very few requirements of the path. I sit there and think, what are the rules of Ananda? That might be a question you might want to ask. What are the rules of this place? And people will say, well, drugs. No, don't take drugs. Don't drink. And don't have a dog. And you say, oh, there's got to be more. And it really isn't that way. And you watch, like, I wonder, I love how Ananda's had this tone. I know it comes from Swami, but he refuses to micromanage. He has incredible, I don't know where it comes from, maybe just confidence in the path, that the path really does work. And if people are sincerely committed to the path, they'll figure it out. Let's see some examples of that. Well, the one I'm closest to, of course, is the schools. Swami put me in charge of the schools very early on, but he didn't spend a whole lot of time talking to me about what it was going to be like with the schools. Like, one of the big questions, how do teenagers fit into the spiritual path? But there was I'm tempted to, but that would be a whole nother talk. But it was a matter of, well, it'll just work out. If you just meditate and try to attune yourself as deeply as you can, you know, the answers will come in that way. How do you run a World Brotherhood colony? I doubt that Swami ever sat down with Jyotish or Jaya or now Peter, different people who have been in charge, and kind of said, now do this tomorrow and the next thing and the next thing. He just basically left it open to see what people would do. I've been amazed to watch Swami in starting centers, how he has done that. Italy being one example, where he sent a couple people over there. I remember we went over, 1980, and then Kirtani was over there at that point, sitting in a little apartment in Rome, trying to start a European center. And not a lot was happening at that point. And then another wave of people, Jyotish and Devi came over at one point, and Ram and Dhyana. And then Swami went over, and Swami was there. And the things really started to vibrate and started to really increase their momentum. And then Swami's gone. And it was like, wait a minute, what's going to happen now? And it really was that hanging in the balance, whether it would work or not. And of course, right now, you look back and say, oh yeah, now it works really, it's really strong. It's thriving. And the same thing in India. You know, Swami was over there for years, and then all of a sudden he's gone. And it's like, even right now, you can say, it's not for sure that India is going to work. It's like, it looks like it will. But you think in most cases, whoever's in charge would be over there trying to help make it work and pushing and being there all the time. And Swami's in LA, or now he'll be back here in the village. And but just that confidence that if you just get people started and get them moving in the right direction in their own way of trying to implement the teachings, trying to live them, good things are going to happen. And you can kind of trust it. You can try to see that it'll just all work out, because it's not driven by personality. It's not driven by any one particular person in the situation. It's a wave of energy that's flowing, and it will happen. It will happen. It will happen because right now it's the Dharma of this age to have these kinds of spiritual colonies, world brotherhood colonies, as Master termed them, to just start to unfold on the planet. It's just time for it to happen. You look around, you see the incredible need for it, that, yeah, it's time to bring that element of real spirituality into everyday life. It's fascinating to watch it kind of on a broader screen. I mean, I follow the news. Some of you have been watching what's been happening in Egypt the last couple of weeks, and we still don't know what's exactly going to happen in Egypt. But you step back and you see there's this larger wave on the planet of bringing, we could say, human rights into the fore in the world. It's a huge difference. You go back a couple hundred years, you go back to the Middle Ages, and there weren't any such thing as human rights. Nobody had rights except the king or the nobility. And you watch gradually, this evolution starts to happen. We're studying world history in high school, so this is all fresh in my mind. But you see William the Conqueror coming into England and really shifting the energy of the Middle Ages. For those of you know that, you know, Master said he was William the Conqueror. And if you study his life, you really see it was a huge shift in the consciousness of the Middle Ages, away from this just scattered anarchy, basically, of the feudal period, then into a more focused energy that would create nations. And then out of that, you see this wave starting of, no, people being able to have a say in things, with the king and government not being quite so strong. You watch it happening with, of course, the American Revolution, this wave of democracy starting to happen on the planet. Very, very tiny at first, very, very shaky. Who could have thought that a bunch of people, colonists in the United States, could overcome Britain? And then you watch it grow. You watch it grow. False starts. You go through the French Revolution. You see, well, it didn't quite work there. But then you see it popping up other places. And then you see in the next wave coming of that always before in the Middle Ages, things were resolved by violence. And always there was a division of opinions. Whoever was the stronger and had the best weapons would win. And then you watch this little guy come on the scene in India, in Mahatma Gandhi, with a whole different approach to say, no, you can do it without violence. In fact, you can do it better without violence. And he sets this incredible tone, this world-changing shift of consciousness by proving that, no, you don't need to do it with violence. You can do it without it. And then you see other people say, wow, he was really neat. He was one of a kind. Until you get somebody like Martin Luther King popping up and saying, you know, I think we can use the same approach in this other situation and placing it in. And then Nelson Mandela coming in. And then you see the whole Soviet Union crumbling, basically without violence. Just this, all of a sudden, this wave of consciousness comes on the planet that, no, we can do things differently. And right now, I'm so excited watching Egypt, because I think, can it happen in a Muslim country? Can it happen in an Arab country? Can the same kind of wave sweep through and have a positive result? We'll find out as we watch the next, you know, months go on. But it's just mind-boggling to think that Egypt would have a nonviolent revolution, basically. It's like, wow, that wouldn't have been possible, you know, 50 years ago. Certainly wouldn't have been possible 100 years ago. And so now the next wave coming in on top of that is this wave of world brotherhood colonies coming in. And here we're still a tiny little little threshold, just kind of holding it on to things and trying to help them unfold. And you look back and you see, you know, we're 40 some years old now. And yeah, it's starting to create a form, it's starting to create a tangible way of living that's so, so different than anything that's been on the planet before. It's different. It's as much different as the nonviolent movement. It's as much different as the movement of democracy and human rights. But it's the next wave of this higher consciousness coming on the planet. And it will work. It has to work, because it's time to work. And Master came to plant those seeds. Swami was hired as the gardener to come in and do a little weeding and a little bit of helping it along that way. But the tone is set now. And we're all the instruments for carrying it on and helping other people see that, oh, no, this is the next wave. So this whole you know, it's so much bigger than any of us. It's so much, and in a way, it has a certain inevitability to it. And all we have the blessing, we have the great opportunity to be instruments for that. We have the instrument to be the channels for, in very specific ways, you know, helping the teenagers or helping the garden or helping business change its minds. Somebody was asking me the other day about, well, what's Nandan really like? They're a new person. And I said, you should go down on Friday evenings to the community center and watch the volleyball that happens. And I said, you can learn an awful lot about Ananda by that. And probably most of you don't go down there. But nobody ever sat anybody down at Ananda and said, this is how you play volleyball in a spiritual community. But it's a very organic process that people just come, they show up and play. But the way it's played is unusual for this planet because people play really hard. They play really hard, but nobody holds on to winning and losing. Most of the time, people can't remember the score. But it's just this whole other approach to doing something that has this very fresh, vibrant, free way of expressing itself. And it's just over and over, you see it, and you just see that there is this underlying new wave of consciousness coming onto this plane through Ananda. So it does work. The spiritual path does work. We don't have to worry about it. We only have to worry about just keeping our own focus on it and trusting that it's going to work not only globally and nationally, but more importantly, it's going to work individually. We're all going to be able to see that incredible unfoldment of ourselves. It's just so, you know, looking back for me personally, you know, for 40 years now, and just seeing the changes in myself personally. I know one of the things that, when the first thing, maybe Swami tuned in when I came here was I was very shy. And the whole idea of standing up in public and talking was just nothing I would ever get close to. I would just completely avoid any situation that required that. So one of the first things that I got to do was asked to do was, oh, would you do Sunday service? I think it if I remember correctly, it was I got to be Swami's chauffeur for a few months. And one morning we were driving about, and he started talking about Sunday service. And he said, I had this fascinating thought yesterday. And he said, what? He said, not I, but Nitai. So from there, I got to give Sunday service. But it was just that whole thing of saying, well, yeah, it can't be Nitai either if I'm going to give Sunday service, because I would never want to do something like that. So it had to be, I had to find another avenue on a deeper level to be able to tune into. And you find that. You find that when there's the willingness doesn't sound like a whole lot, the willingness to put one foot in front of the other, the story of Master seeing the vision of the great, tremendous garden on the high hill, way apart, way from this dirty city he was in. This is a vision he had. And everybody turning away and saying, it's too far. And he just said, well, it may be far, but I can at least put one foot in front of the other. And so if we simply, it's all we have to do. It's all we have to do. The rest is already there. We just have to say one foot in front of the other. And sometimes it's really hard to get that one foot up and put it in front of the other one. And maybe you can't get it all the way in front of you. Maybe you can only get the toe in front of them. But even that will get you there. If you just simply say, I'm not giving up. There's nothing in the world that could make me give up. And I will just continue. And then from that point, everything will unfold for us. So God bless you.